All rise. United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. All who have business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. Will counsel enter their appearances, please?
Your Honor, Jenna Zalmer, law firm Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick for appellant. And with me at counsel's table is Stephen Capricotta, also of the firm.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Megan McCall on behalf of the Secretary, and with me at counsel's table is Ed Cassidy.
Thank you. Do you wish to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes, please.
Fine. Proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Non-dermatological symptoms are not contemplated by Diagnostic Code 7806. Due to a service-connected tinea pedis, the veteran in this case suffers from non-dermatological symptoms such as embarrassment, sleep disturbance, severe pain, and interference with standing and walking. The veteran's foot pain worsened with standing and walking and interferes with his ability to perform his job as a post office custodian. The board's error is found on page 15 of the record, where it concluded that the veteran's symptoms were fully addressed by the non-compensable rating under Diagnostic Code 7806. It listed the veteran's pain, his irritation, and dry skin, but it did not discuss or analyze the veteran's non-dermatological symptoms. The fact that the rating criteria under 7806 does not explicitly list any symptoms does not automatically mean that the first element of THUN is met. But, consistent with this court's holding in Doucette, if a veteran has symptoms that are of a different type than those contemplated by the rating criteria, the board must discuss those symptoms in its extra scheduler analysis. The board's failure to do so here requires remand. Determining whether a veteran's symptoms are of the same type as those contemplated by the rating criteria is a legal determination because it's an interpretation of the diagnostic code. Here, the board should have looked at the veteran's non-dermatological symptoms and determined whether those were the same type as those contemplated by the rating schedule, which explicitly lists that it is for ratings for skin disabilities. The veteran's sleep disturbance, his interference with standing and walking, his embarrassment are not skin-related symptoms.
And counsel, I want to, sorry to interrupt you, but we ordered supplemental briefing in this case, and the question was basically, how For diagnostic codes that aren't symptom-based, how should we go about evaluating them? And, I don't want to mischaracterize the Secretary's position, but it was basically that the board members should basically consult medical literature, treatises, et cetera. And I just want to understand the veteran's position on this. I mean, do you think that's a proper way that board members, should look into a treatise and see if it's a symptom, and if not, then maybe it's not contemplated if it is possibly contemplated?
Yes, Your Honor. The board can look at medical dictionaries and medical treatises. I would say, though, Your Honor, in Doucette, the court found that there were certain types of symptoms that were inherently not contemplated. So part of the analysis the board can take is within the record itself. And they can look at the medical dictionaries and medical treatises if there's a further question about whether a symptom is the same type as those symptoms contemplated by a certain diagnostic code. But I think in this situation, 4.118 says that it's a listing for skin disabilities. And so the court or the board can look at whether or not the veteran's symptoms are skin symptoms. And if there's a question, they can look at the medical dictionary or a medical treatise as well.
Can I jump in there? In your supplemental pleadings, you referred to these items of difficulty sleeping, embarrassment, pain, both as dermatological symptoms and, non-dermatological, and non-dermatological effects. Can you clarify which you think it is? Are they symptoms or effects? Are we talking about step one or step two of THUN?
Yes, Your Honor. We're talking about step one of THUN. So I would say that they're probably effects of the veteran's disability. I believe in Morgan, there's a question about whether or not what the difference is between symptoms and effects. Here, I think whether or not they're symptoms or effects, at the end of the day, they're part of the first step of Thune, because the first step of Thune requires an assessment of the veteran's symptomatology and the severity. And so that whole disability picture, Your Honor, the veteran's skin symptoms and the effects on his embarrassment, his difficulty sleeping, his difficulty standing and walking, are all a part of that first initial step one analysis.
And how do you make that determination about comparing the severity? In the diagnostic code like this, it doesn't have symptoms listed. What are you comparing it against? The severity of his condition compared to what?
I think, Your Honor, we're comparing the veteran's severity to his non-compensable rating. Here, the veteran's tinea pedis, or athlete's foot as it's commonly known as, is rated at 0%. And the question before the board was really, does the 0% rating under Diagnostic Code 7806 encompass all these other problems? Is it when VA made the rating schedule and determined that a veteran's tinea pedis at a 0% rating was because of the certain amount of, you know, skin area affected or the amount of treatment, whether or not that rating was meant to encompass difficulty standing and walking, difficulty sleeping at night, severe pain, you know, interference with employment, things like that, embarrassment, body image issues. The question before the board was really, are those the type of things that VA, when it was making the rating schedule, meant to compensate for this skin disability? So back to Judge Toth's question, how does the board determine whether or not a veteran's symptoms are the type of symptoms? As I mentioned, the board can look at a dictionary. It can look at a medical treatise. Here, there's no indication the board looked at anything. The board's discussion of extrascheduler consideration is on page 15, and it's pretty cursory. Earlier in the decision, the board did cite to Dorland's in its definition of systemic therapy. And I think that, Your Honors, that indicates that the board, when it was using the dictionary, cited to the dictionary. And citing to the dictionary isn't required, but it does allow the veteran to have a clearer idea of how the board is determining whether or not the veteran's symptoms are contemplated by the rating criteria. And so I believe the Secretary posits that the board looked at the dictionary, looked at the clinician's guide. There's no indication in the board's actual decision that that is what the board did here. It just determined that the veteran's dry skin, his pain, his irritation were fully addressed by the rating criteria. But there's no discussion of the veteran's embarrassment and his other effects on his from his skin disability.
Well, what's the nature of the embarrassment? This is athlete's foot?
Yes, Your Honor.
He wears shoes.
He does wear shoes, Your Honor.
At his employment?
Yes, Your Honor. I would assume that he wears shoes as a custodian. I believe he has embarrassment and body image issues, which is something
well, what are they?
What are they?
What were they? What did he say they were at the hearing below?
Your Honor, I'm not sure if he went into specific detail.
Well, isn't that important?
It is important, Your Honor. And if the board had discussed embarrassment and body issues, it might have found that it needed more information about whether or not those actually had an impact on his ability to do his job. We do know, however, that his itching and pain woke him up in the middle of the night, which made him sleepy at work and slowed him down at work. We also know.
Well, how do we know that? Did he say that?
He did say that, Your Honor. I believe that's on page 57 of the record in the VA examination. We also know that his foot pain worsened with standing and walking, which
was... Let me ask you this. Had the board member who made the determination here discussed all of these matters fully, and secondly, had actually categorized the various medical treatises or dictionaries... and discussed them and rejected them, would we have a case?
Yes, Your Honor. The problem here is that the board found that step one of FUN was not met. It didn't talk about step two at all. And so here, even if the board had gone through the analysis that you hypothetically, you know, proposed that they would have done, the board likely would have found that step one of FUN was met. And the second part of that is what is for the board to determine whether or not other related factors exist, such as marked interference with employment or frequent hospitalizations. And so we don't know what the board would have found, but we do know that there is evidence in the record that indicates that if the board had compared the veteran's non-compensable rating to the interference that he experienced at work, it may have found that that rose to the level of marked interference. Right now, he's not being compensated for any interference with his employment. And the fact that he has some slowdown at work, you know, the board acknowledged that that impacted his ability to work. It found on page 16 of the record that TDIU either wasn't reasonably raised or wasn't warranted on the merits. It's a little bit unclear about what the board found there, but it did concede that there was some impact on his employment. And marked interference with employment is a lower standard than TDIU. So even if the board found that TDIU wasn't raised or wasn't warranted, it may still have found that compared to the veteran's current non-compensable rating, there was marked interference with employment. Your Honor, where the board does look outside the record to a medical treatise or a medical dictionary, well, especially a medical treatise, Your Honor, the board needs to identify that treatise and provide the veteran notice of what treatise it's using to allow the veteran to have a meaningful opportunity to respond. This is currently being done. VA, right now, when the board uses the treatise or when the board gets an independent medical opinion, they do issue a letter to the veteran citing Thurber v. Brown. So this is something that the board does now. It would not be burdensome or an additional requirement of VA. And so if there are no further questions, we would ask that this court hold that Diagnostic Code 7806 only contemplates dermatological symptoms, hold that the board may identify whether a symptom is of the type contemplated by a diagnostic code by looking at a medical dictionary, by looking at the record, or by looking at a treatise, but where the board goes outside of the record and looks at a treatise, it must provide the veteran notice and an opportunity to respond.
So you're asking us to make that last holding as a matter of law?
Yes, Your Honor.
Anything else?
And I think we could reach that question even though in this particular case the board did not cite to any particular medical treatise or dictionary?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the supplemental order makes clear that we are trying to figure out what the board can cite to, and if this court holds that the board can cite to a medical treatise, which we agree that the board can do, it needs to provide some sort of meaningful opportunity for the veteran to respond.
Well, I actually have a more fundamental question, which is, you may have already dealt with it by implication. Doesn't the board member have a either as part of the statutory duty to assist or some other concept, make themselves aware of the file of the veteran before the hearing and be fully familiar with it? And so wouldn't that also entail or imply that they should tell the veteran what they've questions they had or questions they've come up with or ideas that they wish to have addressed based upon their analysis of these medical treatises, or indicate, look, I haven't read any medical treatises, but maybe you ought to find some to tell us how we can be how it can be helpful to us.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe as part of the board's duty during a hearing is to fully inform
so
the
that's,
veteran.
So that's a much bigger issue. That's a much bigger holding than would theoretically be contemplated by the facts of this case.
Yes,
is that
Your
right?
Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
And you have no problem in urging us to make that finding. And you don't think we should have a problem in reaching that?
No, Your Honor. I think if you were to reach that decision today, that would be in the court's purview. I don't think you have to go that far here. The facts of this case are more narrow, as you pointed out. But if if the board is going, or excuse me, if the court is going to reach a holding about the board's duties when it uses a treatise, that's something that the court can reach.
Thank you.
Can we talk a little bit about, if it's not a treatise, but a medical dictionary that you talked about in your supplemental pleadings, and if the board used that to define a term and that term is material, then they would have to provide advance notice. Are you suggesting that in these diagnostic codes that do not list symptoms, anytime they look to a medical dictionary, they'd have to provide notice?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Treatises and dictionaries are a little different. Dictionaries are a fact. It's an unquestionable definition. As I mentioned, the board used a medical dictionary here. There was no reason to provide the veteran notice of a dictionary definition. Treatises, though, are conclusions that are based on facts, and they may not be as widely accepted in the medical community as a dictionary. So the board can take administrative notice of a dictionary. The court can take judicial notice of a dictionary, but I think a treatise is a little bit different.
And what about examiners? I mean, if the board is directing the examination, ask the examiner to elicit all the symptoms and make opine as to whether or not these are characteristic or typical of the diagnostic code. I mean, what if it went down to the examiner level? Would all that still apply?
Well, I believe a veteran is generally provided a copy of a VA examination before the issue goes to a board, so the veteran would have an opportunity if they disagreed with the VA examiner or if he disagreed with the examiner's qualifications, there would still be that opportunity to respond at that point.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Secretary?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Secretary requests the Court to affirm the May 27, 2016 Board decision because appellant has not shown that his tinea pedis is exceptional or unusual. Rather, he has shown that his tinea pedis is that of the average individual diagnosed with a disability. At issue in this case are the symptoms at which appellant has. It seems that appellant has conceded the non-dermatological symptoms as included in the definition of tinea pedis. Therefore, we are left with the non-dermatological symptoms as appellant's counsel has identified them. Counsel has identified them as embarrassment, difficulty sleeping, and pain on standing and walking. It is the Secretary's position that those are not symptoms. Those are effects. And per this court's case in Yancey, the first step in extra scheduler consideration is symptoms. Here, the dermatological symptoms included in the definition of tinea pedis have been conceded. Therefore, step two is the effects. So embarrassment, sleep, and pain on standing and walking would not be considered in the first step of the extra scheduler consideration. Therefore, we are left with the symptomatology that the board conceded or the board discussed in defining that step one had not been met. Regarding that, because the symptoms have been conceded in this case by appellant, and the board has found that the symptomatology does not raise to the level of exceptional or unusual to have step one met, we don't even get to step two to discuss those effects of what counsel is identified as.
So, I'm sorry to sort of interject here, but obviously, I mean, the difficulty with non-symptom-based diagnostic codes. I mean, we've seen this in Doucette and, dozens of other cases. How exactly do the adjudicators arrive at the decision as to whether or not a diagnostic code contemplates something? So I know we put you on the spot in order to supplemental briefing, and the Secretary, and you put forth a position as to how maybe that could reasonably be done, but how was that done in this case? I mean, how did they sort of look at the symptoms, the dryness, the itchiness, whatever, decide that these are actually contemplated by 7806?
We can look at the regulatory history first, Your Honor. 4.118 has gone through a number of interpretations since its founding in 1945. The Federal Registry in 1993 has indicated that the Secretary has moved away from a symptom-based measurement to a more objective-based measurement. And the rating criteria prior to 2002, when the final regulation took effect, included symptomatology in that regulation. It included the symptoms of tinea pedis and all fungal infections at that time, including exfoliation, exudation, itching, disfigurement, ulceration, crusting, nervous manifestations, and the repugnance of the disability itself. In 2002, the Secretary has decided that those were too subjective to rate the actual disability and move to an objective standard. So in this case, particularly for the disability at issue, we have a regulatory history identifying the symptoms for which the adjudicators then apply to the individual veteran. In this case, too, and this court has recognized the expertise that adjudicators have in applying the symptomatology or the symptoms that appellant has to those diagnostic codes. There's no difference here in this case with the board taking the symptomatology that the veteran, for both his medical statements and his lay statements, his medical examinations and his lay statements, and applying those symptoms that he's identified or that the medical examiner has identified to the diagnostic code, as was done here.
So the Secretary's position is the board properly applied the regulation.
Correct.
And that's it.
Essentially, one of the main questions that
doesn't necessarily imply that there should be anything more. But is that the argument?
The argument at this point in time is step one. The issue raised in briefing was that step one was not adequately addressed by the board. The board addressed the dermatological symptoms that are included in the diagnostic code. Appellant has not raised symptoms in the Secretary's position, has not raised symptoms that would allow for an exceptional or unusual disability picture. Rather, the appellant has raised effects per this court's case law in Yancey. Symptoms are the number one. You don't get past step one unless you get past the exceptional and unusual disability picture to even get to the effects. And here the effects have not raised the issue of marked interference with employment.
So, again, it's the Secretary's position. This is I'm not making light of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's serious to the veteran involved. But this is an everyday case of athlete's foot and nothing more.
Correct, Your Honor. He has his symptomatologies.
And that condition has been fully contemplated by the regulation itself and, in this case, by the application of the regulation to these facts.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct. That is the Secretary's position.
So in your supplemental pleadings, you laid out a process that you suggest board members may be taking when they come up with their idea of what a diagnostic code contemplates when it doesn't list symptoms, but you said that that is not a universal policy or procedure. So what else would be appropriate if that's not the procedure, and why would we be led to believe that this board member followed that process if it's not a universal procedure?
Your Honor, that paragraph in the supplemental was not to show that it was not a universal procedure. It was more so to show the generalization of board decisions and how they are not precedential to one another. So if one judge had used Dorlans and defined everything out specifically, it's not necessarily that another judge would do the same thing, given the fact that the board decisions are not precedential. That wasn't to admit that there are different policies and procedures per board member. It was just to show that the non-precedential nature of the board decisions, to show some of the flux in between the statement of reasons and bases that each board member uses.
So has VA put out internal guidance to its adjudicators as to how they're to handle these diagnostic codes that don't list symptoms in terms of defining what the characteristic symptoms are?
Yes, and for adjudicators at the VA level, you have the clinician's guide and the EPSS that I have identified in the supplemental too. Those essentially are a fact sheet for what diagnostic code specifies what symptomatology.
In your position as the board and the decision on appeal, they do not have to list which source that they look to come up with the characteristic symptoms?
Not necessarily. Here, the definition of tinea pedis is itself inclusive of the symptomatology of the disability, And also in this case, the Secretary has spoken as to the regulatory, in the regulatory history, the Secretary has spoken to the symptomatology that is discussed underneath that diagnostic code. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, the Secretary requests this Court find that extra schedule of consideration is not warranted and affirm the Board's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your Honor, first I'd like to clarify this, the appellant is not conceding that the veteran's veteran's dermatological symptoms are contemplated. The first step of FUN is actually a two-part step. The first step is to look at the veteran's symptoms, and the second step is to look at the severity of those symptoms. Here the veteran has pain. Even if the appellant were to concede that pain is a typical dermatological symptom, we do not concede that the severity of the veteran's pain specifically is contemplated by his non-compensable rating. The veteran's pain is so severe that it wakes him up at night, he's itching, he can't stand, he can't walk without additional pain. This is not contemplated by a 0% rating. And next, the Secretary is taking too narrow of a reading of 3.321. Yes, Yancey did say that the symptoms are the first step and the effects are the second, but Yancey can't be read in a vacuum. After Yancey, this Court in Doucette used symptoms and effects interchangeably. And the Court has long held that it's not the symptoms, but it's the effects that really determine the veteran's level of impairment. And so symptoms and effects are both relevant to the first step of FUN. In Doucette, Your Honors, the court found that if a veteran had symptoms or effects such as social isolation due to difficulty hearing or pain or vertigo, then extrascheduler consideration was required, or at least discussion of extrascheduler consideration was required. So social isolation is an effect, but it was still relevant to the first step of FUN. Your Honor, The Secretary really just focuses on the veteran's non-dermatological symptoms, but he doesn't explain why the veteran's non-dermatological symptoms and why the veteran's effects on his employment would not rise to the level of meeting step one and two of them. Neither did the Board. The Board provided no explanation, no discussion of that, of those facts, or of why it found that the veteran's disability picture was fully addressed by his 0% rating. So, thank you.
Thanks very much. We'll reserve opinion. We appreciate the excellent briefing and argument of all counsel, and now we'll come down and greet counsel.